Welcome to Punk News Podcast, episode 729. We've got exactly 1 hour, and I am starting my stopwatch right now to see how much we can get done in 1 hour. We are here with M. Moore. M. Moore, don't talk until I start the stopwatch, which I am starting right now. M, what's happening?
I'm getting ready for Pooza, and it's really exciting. I'm finishing up an episode right now with lots of tunes. And doing lots of packing and figuring out what the hell the weather is going to be like.
Well, that's exciting. I didn't know you were going to Pooza. When are you leaving for Pooza? Is this weekend?
Yeah, Pooza's this weekend. I leave on the Thursday, and then it's that week. It's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then I'm back on the Monday. So I'm really excited. I'm looking forward to it a lot. There's lots of great bands, and yeah, I'm stoked. I can't wait.
Pooza Fest is in 2 days, 17 hours, 58 minutes, and 45 seconds, according to their countdown. I know the feeling because that's how excited I get with punk rock bowling, except for punk rock bowling isn't happening this year, which I'm not going to keep bitching about. But that being said, M, name five bands that you were excited to see at Pooza Fest.
Five bands. Okay. Crossdog, Anti-Queens, Mall Crimes, Midnight Peg, and Iron Roses.
I noticed you didn't name any of the headliners. Pup, Buzzcocks, Bedouin Soundclash.
I also want to see Pup, Buzzcocks, and Bedouin Soundclash. I want to see everybody. It was just those were the ones that came to mind.
How about Baroness and Planet Smashers? How about
Oh
Homefront,
my God.
Who
Yes.
I saw 4 days ago?
I'm going to see Baroness, Planet Smashers, and Homefront. Should the schedule go perfectly, I want to see all of them. Cancer Bats are playing. I'm really excited for their set. Oh my God, like there's just so many bands that are gonna be like so sick.
How about DFL and Crazy in the Brains, M?
Ooh, yes.
You definitely
Definitely
should go
need
see.
to check them out.
You should definitely go see both those bands. How, like, if you want to see all the bands at Pooza Fest, can you, or do they like stack against each other?
You do have some time conflicts. If you can see a lot of bands per day, like I think not last year, but the year before, last year that I went, I'm pretty sure I saw like 10 plus bands a day, and that was like very much like kind of regimented. But this year is really cool because like Buzzcocks are playing two shows. So they're playing the outdoor stage and they're also playing the indoor stage. So if you do have a time conflict with them on the outdoor stage, you can see them on the indoor stage or vice versa, which is awesome. So I'm still not sure which Buzzcock set works best into my schedule, but like definitely gonna see them. But yeah, like there's so many just sick bands. They have wrestling this year and all sorts of stuff. It's gonna be great. They have bingo this year, karaoke.
Is it like one big venue? Is it multiple venues? What's the setup there?
Yeah, so it takes place downtown Montreal across a few venues. So everything's within walking distance to each other. They're super close. And you just kind of go from one to the other. And then one venue is kind of split in two. So you have a larger side and a smaller side. So if you're in that venue, you can see all of the bands on both sides pretty much without overlap, which is pretty fun. Or with minimal overlap, I guess I should say. And then they have the outdoor stage, which is in a different, or well, they have the outdoor stage, which is really, really cool. And that's free for everybody. If you have a pass or you don't have a pass, you can go and see that. And then this year, they have an acoustic stage, which is new. So that'll be really cool too. But yeah, everything's super central. You can like get food, go see bands, and it's a really nice kind of environment that way.
So do you have like a wristband that works all weekend, or how's that work?
Yeah, you have a wristband that gets you into all the shows, and as long as they're not at capacity, you can go in and rock out and have fun. So yeah, it's really, really cool. It's a good system they have.
Well, there you have it, Pooza Fest this weekend, and M is excited, so that'll be fun.
Woo!
You're staying at a hotel. Where are you staying at?
Staying at a hotel. I don't remember the name of it, but it is about 10, 15 minutes away from the main drag walking, which is awesome. So, because last time I went, we stayed at a place that was a little farther away. It was very, very nice, but it was quite a walk to get in. So this is much better.
Nice hotel, crappy hotel. What level of hotel are we at?
Like good hotel, like mid-range hotel, good deal, got a really good deal on it. It has a continental breakfast, which is very exciting, and we're by a bunch of like restaurants, which is also very exciting because I want to eat a lot. I'm looking forward to smoked meat and poutine and pizza, and hopefully this year actually trying pouza, which is poutine on pizza.
You've never had puza? Oh, wait, no. Oh, I'm thinking of poutine, not puza itself. Last question: how big is your crew? Are you going with a big crew, small crew? How big is the crew?
A very, very small crew, just me and one other person.
Well, that's
So
cool.
I'm excited.
So,
I meet up with friends, hopefully.
on a scale of 1 to 10, what level of mischief are you going to get involved in?
Ooh, mischief. I think probably a six, like a decent amount, but not too much. Got to preserve the energy to mosh.
Well, sounds like. And are you going to do? Actually, I famously interviewed Hugo about 10 years ago, who runs Hugo,
Oh yeah.
and I was like, "So, like, what should people do when they're not at the fest?" And he's like, "I don't know. I'm too busy planning the fest." I'm like, "Thanks, man." And what else are you going to do aside from when you're at the actual Pooja Fest itself?
Aside from being at Pooza Fest itself, I am going to find some good restaurants. I'm going to eat, and I think I'm going to walk around Old Montreal. I might do the wheel this year. They have like a giant like Ferris wheel type deal. So like it's just very touristy, but like I've never done it, so that might be a fun thing to do. So I think that's about it right
Okay,
now.
well, they have it. M is looking forward to Pooja Fest. Sounds like a lot of fun to me.
Woo! Yeah,
Okay,
you
so
should come
that's
up. Well, not this week. I know you have your thing, but like you should come up like next year.
if it
Come up to
doesn't conflict.
Canada.
It often conflicts with punk rock bowling, but we'll see about next year, and we'll see about next year. But speaking of which, a lot happening at Punk News this weekend and next weekend, this summer. Of course, this Saturday, Dez Kadena does All Black Flag at Philamoca in Philadelphia. There's about 35 tickets left, so looking more like we're going to sell out, which is pretty cool. We're going to have special edition Black Flag records for, I shouldn't have said that. We have special edition records for sale, which are Dez records, which you'll be able to get at the show for a somewhat reasonable price. And of course, the money benefits Dez. And that's going to be a rad show. Dez does All Black Flag for the first time since 1981. Then the next day, the Chamonix Creek Blue in 10 minutes north of Philadelphia, Philly Record Freakout Jumbo Edition, 50,000 records for sale, free entry, booze, and food trucks. The Chamonix Creek Brewing. Then June 6th, Philly Record Freak Out back in our favorite spot, Philomoca, 12th and Spring Garden, Philadelphia. 35,000 records for sale and curated sellers. So that's always a blast. And then August 1, Summer Soiree 9. Jay
Ooh.
and R of the Slackers with Kempe Gooley, with Vic of Doom Stompers doing all Clash. Danbert doing Clash and solo stuff. Danbert from Wamba, of course. The Drugettes doing all Clash. And the Draculas with. The singer of the Doom Stompers, which is her name, Kayla, I forget her name. They're doing all Clash too, so it's going to be a blast. And that's what's happening this summer at Punk News. And so yeah, let's talk about some. Well, actually, this month, this week, and not a huge news week. Some news, but not a huge news week. In old
Yeah.
school news, Rudimentary Peni is finally re-releasing the EPs of RP, which is their first two EPs, Farce and Rudimentary Peni. One came out on Crash Records, and I think the other came out on Outer Himalay, which is singer Nick Blanco's label. Of course, Rudimentary Peni, one of the greatest bands of all time, one of the freakiest bands of all time, one of the most groundbreaking punk bands of all time, and just totally awesome. So it's cool to get there. Original stuff back in print over the past. Honestly, it's taken them a little while, but Sealed Records has been putting re-releasing. Their plan is to release all the Rudimentary Peni stuff, but they've kind of been taking their time. They've released Death Church, Cacophony, Pope Adrian, and maybe Farce. And the new record, the Great War, which was super good. And so there's still like so as of now, the first half of Rudimentary Peni has been re-released. So I'm psyched on this. I'm super psyched for the second half. I don't know why Seal Records is taking. I don't know if it's just a cash flow issue or a planning issue, or they just want to make people savor them. But at any rate, I'm super psyched on this. Of course, I picked this up and I'm psyched on it. And it's cool to get these back in print because Rudimentary Peni Records famously go in and out and in and out and in and out of print. They're originally in print and out of Himalayan, went out of print, got re-released by Southern, went out of print, and now they're again getting re-released by Sealed Records, which is just a spin-off of La Vida Es Un Mus in the UK. And so anyway, I'm psyched on this. This is cool. The reissues don't really come with any like liner notes or anything like that. So I don't know. It's cool to get a reissue of the original thing, but I think Rudimentary Peni is deserving of the super deluxe reissue. So it would be nice if it came with a book or something like that. But then again, it's kind of tough to criticize Sealed Records on that because maybe this is what Blinko wants. Nobody knows, you know. You know, Blinko is famously pretty private, and so I don't know how active he actually wants to be in regards to the reissues. Like he might not even care, or he might care a whole lot. I don't even know. So anyway, and Rudimentary Peni, the first half of the discography is now reissued. Are you excited? Did you order this? Do you not like Rudimentary Peni?
I like Rudimentary Peni. I am excited to see this out and available on like kind of everything. Like you can get it digitally, vinyl, CD, cassette. I like the look of the CD, so I haven't ordered anything yet, but I'm really thinking about the CD. Always
It is
good to see Rudimentary Peni back in print.
cool that Sealed Records does do CDs, which honestly more and more people. And did you know Hopeless Records doesn't do CDs? That kind of blew my mind. Like even though CDs are not
Ooh.
nearly what they used to be, I thought it was still kind of a somewhat of a valid market. But it seems like nobody buys CDs anymore, or in America anyway. I know in Japan and in Japan CDs are still big. Europe they're still kind of big-ish, but it seems like in America, CDs are all but dead.
I don't understand why though. Like CDs are a lot of fun. They're very durable and like they're pretty cheap, I think, still to make. So why not do a CD?
I think because people that would have played CDs just stream, and people buy records specifically because they want a big, cool thing to look at. I think that's why.
Fair point.
So I love
Bring
CDs.
back CDs.
Yeah, I hear you. And here on the other end, of, well, and here's another thing, though. And I don't think this person was being malicious or anything. In the comment section, they said, "I already bought my T-shirt and cassette. I've got this on bootleg white vinyl already. Sounds great." Generally speaking, I'm very against bootlegs, and as you know, with some exceptions, you know, like there's those Black Flag bootlegs of Live in 81, which is awesome. There's Black Flag 1982 demos, or I think sometimes they call it 84 demos, but I think it's 82. There's the Screamers record that was never released, the Geza X demos, which is really a full album. So, like, when it's really valuable, not valuable, when it's really important, significant material that's not in print, I'm actually not opposed to bootlegs because I'd rather it be out in some form than not out at all. You know, however, I get really mad at the bootleggers for like Rudimentary Peni and that kind of stuff because A, Blinko can use the cash. Everybody involved in the pipeline that's putting out officially can use the cash. And the fact of the matter is, you can get these records through Sealed for a very reasonable price. So the fact that these records are being bootlegged and are still being bootlegged, there is still this weird thing in punk that like bootlegs are cool. You know, or acceptable, or
Right.
part of punk. Like bootlegs is not a part of punk. Like ripping off the artist that's not making that much money. That is so whack. I hate it. I hate it.
It's an, yeah, like if you can support the artist, support the artist.
And like you know, at Punk Rock Bowling, like I've told this a couple of times. Like if you walk around the shops at Punk Rock Bowling or the tents, you know, the vendor tents. There's always people like if the Damned are playing, there's some vendor selling bootleg Damned t-shirts. It's one thing to sell a Screamers bootleg t-shirts because no one represents the Screamers anymore, but to sell a bootleg Damned t-shirt when the band is playing right there is so brazen. And People often think like, A, the gulag is just some kid or somebody with like a noble cause. It's never somebody with a noble cause. It's just some creep trying to get some money for free off someone else's work. Like, I really don't. Here's the question then. Why in punk art do we somewhat accept bootlegs? Like, what's up with that?
I think it has something to do with kind of the oh, I didn't see it, so I made it myself kind of thing. And there's a difference between like making really cool like band merch that isn't, you know, ripping anybody off and is kind of, well, not kind of, but is showing like your own creative spirit. Like there's so many really cool things like that. They're not pretending to be bootlegs or anything. It's just I like this band or I was inspired by this song, so I made like this shirt or I made this print or something. That's awesome. And people do that all the time and it's their own artwork and it's fantastic. But I think that sometimes it does get a little, I do think with the bootlegs, it's also because that was the only way so many things were available for so long, you know? So it's just kind of become part of the like culture, so to speak. You know, like you mentioned, like the Black Flag bootlegs, that, you know, that would be the only way people could hear the band for how long, or, you know, capture the show that maybe, well, not everyone would be at. So I think that's kind of why they've persisted and why there's less of a sort of, oh my God, this thing's been bootlegged reaction. That'd be my guess. What do you think?
I think you're right. I think it's a combination of A, being, you know, against authority or whatever. And even though they haven't stepped back and think, well, the authority you're striking about is the bands that you love, which is creepy and weird. I think it's accessibility. I think it's that in punk things are maybe a little bit less regulated than other areas, so it's easier to do so the creeps can get in. And the fact of the matter is for bootleggers that sell bootlegs for money, I've yet to see true fandom. Like the story is, oh, he's just a fan. He just wants, you know, he loves the Clash or whatever. You know, to me, what I see just some creep that says, oh, I can make money off this, especially when it's a band like Rudimentary Peni, like Crass, like X-Ray. Well, maybe a bad example, like Adverts, like Addicts, bands that actually can use money and make money off that stuff. So that's what I think is. Anyways, I'm against bootleg in general, but not always. Here's something sort of related to reissues, though, is Stooges are re-releasing a new version of Funhouse. The new version is, of course, is it a mo-fi? Yes, it's a mo-fi. And it's a 2 LP at 45 RPM, so there's like probably two songs per side. I think it's like $60, which for a MoFi is not that expensive. There's also a MoFi CD. Of course, Funhouse has been reissued numerous times, and there has been a deluxe reissue remaster that came out about 15 years ago, which is really good. So here's the question then. Funhouse is a very le it's one of the most important records of all time. It's one of the greatest rock records of all time. I think Jack White says it's the greatest rock record of all time. I might not disagree. Funhouse is an amazing, amazing album. But and do we need a mo-fi version of it? You know, like it's loud and bombastic and grimy. So is mo-fi doing it any favors?
I don't think so. I don't think so at all. Like I think it's interesting because you get to hear it kind of in a different way, but I don't think it's really going to make that much of a difference. What do you think?
I don't think it's gonna make them. I bought one because I'm a sucker, and then you know, oh, it's a Stooges, I gotta get it, you know. But the record, first of all, the record sounds amazing as is. It's like this is a little bit of a different example. But remember when they had not Tom Martin, who's the Beatles producer, George Martin, when they had his son Giles Martin totally remix the Beatles records and like make them sound different. It's like, well, what's the like. I thought George Martin is considered like one of the greatest producers of all time. So why are we remixing his work? You know what I mean? And so it just seemed kind of like a weird and people raved about those Giles Martin reissues or remixes. And to me they sounded different, but definitely not better. So like it just seemed pointless to me. And so, why are we, quote, remastering, remixing one of the best-selling records of all time, Abbey Road or whatever? I think this is kind of the same way in that, Funhouse sounds awesome. The deluxe CD reissues sound awesome. But it is a muddy, thick record, and I don't know that added clarity will make it sound better. A good example is I've got the New York Dolls. It's not a Mo-Fi. I think it's the Rhino. It's the Rhino version of Mo-Fi, like Rhino High Fidelity or whatever. New York Dolls, first record, one of the best records of all time. The Rhino High Fidelity, like it sounds crisp and you can hear everything, but there's such separation, you lose the raw power of the record. No pun intended, or maybe pun intended. And so it sounds a little bit less punchy. There's higher fidelity, but less strength, And then you get into
Sure.
the, then you know when you get into like super like hi-fi auto high fidelity things, is like going back to the Beatles. Like if you read about like different Beatles records, the guys are like, "Oh well, on A Day in the Life, I turn the bass down, I turn the treble up, and I turn this up, and then on For the Benefit of Mr. Kite, I turn the bass back up and the treble down, and this and the, And they're like
Right.
constantly on every song, they're like fumbling with knobs. And it's like, do you even like listening to music, or do you just like fumbling with knobs, It kind of takes all the, like, if I can't just put the record on and have it beat the shit out of me, then it's not that fun. I don't have to worry about my levels, But then again, it's to each their own. Like, to some people, maybe fiddling with the knobs like you're driving a spaceship is part of the fun,
It could be,
And
yeah.
it's like, I sell records for fun as a hobby, and some people will pick up like a $6 Billy Joel record or Elton John record, and they'll look at the A side and the B side. They'll shine the flashlight on it, like, look, like there's a tiny little mark right there. And it's like, well, yeah, it's a $6 Billy Joel record. It'll play fine. I got records that are like even hit with weed whackers that play fine. Really? And I used to get annoyed by them, but then I realized, well, to them, listen, buying records is like wine. You take a sip and you like try to savor every nuance, Whereas I just
Sure.
like rocking out the tunage, but they like inspecting every single possible element, So it's just a different way to consume music, really. So like we're listening to music for literally different reasons, And neither of which is bad. I mean, mine's better, but whatever. And so this is kind of like that. And like some people like the they like to see how hi-fi can I get it, so that I can hear, Ron Ashton's fingers touching the guitar. Can I hear that? I don't necessarily need to hear that because I want the full impact of the record altogether. I don't need the super high fidelity. I want the strength. I just want to be able to put the record on and enjoy it. I don't want to worry about every single little thing, But that being said, sometimes you do get a high fidelity record and it sounds amazing. So I can't say that I'm against it, and I did buy it, but frankly, I don't really have huge hopes because the remaster from like 2005 or whatever sounds awesome. So I don't really know how it can sound that much better. Like, how much better can it really sound,
Yeah.
And what record do you think should get a high fidelity reissue?
Ooh. A high fidelity reissue. I'm trying to think of something that like it would work really well with. And what I'm thinking is like something that's like pretty produced already, like something that sounds really kind of nice as it is. And the first thing that came into my mind was the Bring Me the Horizon Next Gen album, because it's all right. Like the production on that is really nice and very like smooth. And I think having that in like a hi-fi thing would really enhance it and bring out some of the background like samples and stuff. So that would be mine. What about you?
Well, for one thing would be the Chrome catalog, because those records are so dense and there's so many sound effects. It would be cool to maybe hear all the sound effects going on at once in those records. I'm trying to think of
Yeah.
something with maybe a broader int like would it be interesting to hear like Ramones in super hi-fi, or would that like take away the impact of the record? Because that first Ramones record has very lo-fi sounds,
I think it would take away from the record.
How
Because like
about
it's supposed to be kind of like lo-fi and like
Yeah.
scrappy.
How about something like New Order or Bauhaus or something like that, where there is, relatively high production, that icy production?
Ooh, that would be interesting.
Yeah.
I would like to hear that. I think that would be cool.
But all that being said, is like whenever I put on a super high fidelity record, like it sounds good, but not that much better to me. And then after like a few minutes, I like my brain forgets that it's high fidelity, just sounds like the record. Is that because my stereo, like I got a cool stereo, I don't have anything crazy. Like my whole stereo setup, well, maybe about a, by the time you include turn, I got a nicer turntable now. I got about a $350 turntable, which, you know, is not near the highest level turntable there is, you know. I mean, you can spend
Right.
$100,000 on a turntable. So if you include my turntable and my stereo, maybe about 800 or 900 bucks, which is a nice stereo, but that's not like the crazy stereo ever by far. So is it that my setup is just not sophisticated enough? Is it that my ear's just not attuned enough? Or is super high fidelity and is it all hogwash?
I think there's something to super high fidelity, but I don't think it's as much as people kind of make it out to be. Like, I think it's if you really enjoy kind of getting into the nitty-gritty of stuff, then like hell yeah, like this is your thing. But if you want to just sort of like enjoy the record without kind of thinking about some of that stuff, then take it or leave it.
Well,
That would be my thought.
I think it's a little bit of Emperor's New Clothes. I think there is something to it, but I think the effect is overstated. So yeah, here's something that was controversial in of itself and a little bit controversial punk news because the readers do not know their punk history, which really annoys me, and that is kind of why I post about MIA. MIA
Oh,
was kicked
yeah.
off Kid Cudi's tour. Here's what he said. Tour update, MIA is no longer on this tour. I told my management to send a notice to our team before we started tour that I didn't want anything offensive at my shows because I already knew what time it was and I was assured things were understood. After the last couple shows, I've been flooded with messages from fans that were upset by her rants. This to me is very disappointing and I won't have someone on my tour making offensive remarks that upsets my fan base. Thank you for understanding. Rager. I guess Kid Cudi calls himself Rager. I didn't know that. And so anyways, so basically, MIA was on tour with Kid Cudi, and she made some comments that basically it was a rambling mess, but it seemed as though her statements were pro-Trump and anti-immigrant. And of course, during the last presidential run, MIA said that she was pro-Trump and thought he was great and everything. And this is kind of interesting because MIA's parents and maybe MIA herself actually is an immigrant. I think she is. And you know, she kind of went off the deep end a few years ago. Maybe she was always off the deep end. With the li and the listeners are like, oh, I guess punk uses TMZ now. They forget that MIA was kind of the darling of the punk and indie world because she sampled the Clash's "Straight to Hell" for her song "Paper Planes," which I always thought was a great beat but overrated song. And so MIA's totally kind of whacked out now. So Sam, I mean Sam M,
Yes.
should we cover MIA? And was Kid Cudi correct to kick her off the tour? And is MIA part of the punk discussion still? And are you surprised by MIA's heel turn?
I think that it's totally fine to cover MIA on Punk News. Like you said, like there's a lot of history there and there's, you know, lots of stuff kind of going on. I think that Kid Cudi was right to remove MIA from the tour because if your opener is saying, you know, like really, really shitty things that, you know, you don't agree with and your fan base doesn't agree with, and it's just going to be, you know, however many like 30 to 45 minutes of just people being uncomfortable and, you know, your opener kind of like looking for a fight almost and kind of what's the point? People aren't going to show up, or people are going to show up late, or you know, whatever, and it just seems sort of like a waste of time. So I think her removal was the best option. With her like complete 180, like yeah, very surprised with that, like very surprised that you know she came out in support of Trump, and very surprised that she came out with like you know pro ICE stuff and. Or anti-immigrant stuff, at least, and the whole like tinfoil hat kind of thing, or tinfoil lined coats, or whatever it was to like reflect the 5G. So I don't know what causes someone to like flip, or if she, again, she always held those beliefs, and it was just something that kind of the timing was right sort of thing, but it doesn't feel like that. Again, I don't know her personally, and I just know like bits and pieces about her here and there. But it does seem like a pretty big kind of jump. So yeah, I don't think it's like TMZ level by any means.
I just get annoyed at people. Like, I get annoyed when people say that's not punk, and they don't understand the history that no, it is in the punk discussion. Like, they don't know because they're ignorant as to the punk history. I get so annoyed by that. Anyways, MI is whack. Her statements are whack. Her early music is okay, not great. Kind of annoying. And she actually was kind of one of the first internet buzz acts, and she came around at the height of Pitchfork when Pitchfork could literally make or break you, and they made her pretty big. So was Kid Cudi correct to kick her off? Yeah, I mean, if you're saying Trump's great and all that stuff, and and it's your tour, he's right to kick her off. So anyway, that's that. So the real question, Em, is will we hear from MIA again, or is that kind of the end of the story?
I think that's going to be kind of the end of the story. I don't think there's going to be too much other news. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think she's doing like a spiral, and each time she becomes less and less relevant. So each time she acts, maybe acts more and more weird, and then it just, costs her relevance each time, Oh, that's right. I forgot. Remember she was selling like ponchos that were supposed to ward against Wi-Fi and 5G. Do you remember that? I forgot all about that.
Yeah.
Did you buy one?
Yeah. No, I like being inundated with 5G.
So anyways, wow, listen to this statement that she put out 2 years ago. Trump is going to ride America through the most challenging 4 years coming, pulling out weed, and RFK will inherit America when God is ready to replant and rebuild it righteously. The
Oh,
real question,
no.
Em, is why would Kid Cudi put her on his tour? I mean, there's so many other people you could pick from.
Do they have a history? Like, were they on the same label, or like,
Maybe,
did they
maybe.
like produce each other, or did anything kind of, were there any collaborations?
I don't know. The real question, should I care about Kid Cudi? I know he's pretty famous, but I don't know if I've ever actually heard a Kid Cudi song. Should I care?
I have never heard a Kid Cudi song, so I can't really weigh in on that. But I don't really know anything about this guy. Known for his song Day and Night, apparently. Okay, cool.
Well, there you go. So let's see here. What else is happening? Oh, so this is kind of sad. So a little while ago, Sony in 2022, Sony purchased Metal Sucks and Metal Injection through the Orchard. Recently, they fired everyone from both those companies except for one person, and also the advertising network, Blast Beat Network. So let's look at Metal Sucks right now to see if they're posting anything. So Sam, do you think they're shutting the, like it's always weird when companies buy companies and then just turn them off, like shut them down. So do you think Sony bought this because they had no idea what they were doing? Or actually, let's see here. Actually, it looks like they're not really posting anything. Give me a second. Let me make sure
Metal
about this.
injection
I'm at Metal
or
Sucks right
Sony?
now. Give me a
Oh,
second. Let's see here.
okay.
Looks like oh yeah, they're barely posting anything. They've posted like three articles in the past 2 weeks.
Ooh,
So,
jeez.
do you think that let's look at Metal Injection and what's the difference between Metal Sucks and Metal Injection? Is one like sassier or something?
I don't really visit either one. So I would assume that Metal Sucks would be a little more sassy just based on the name, but looking at it now, I don't think it is. I think they're pretty much the same thing. It's just a different layout.
So Metal Sucks is pretty much shut down, but Metal Injection is still putting out lots of news. So here's the question: is it's always kind of puzzling when companies like buy a company and they just like ruin it and it's like, well, what was your plan here? But here's the scarier thing: is do you think Do you think that Sony is planning on just using AI to generate other articles going forward? And will we even know? Right now, the person writing all their articles
Ooh.
is this person, Isabella Ambrosio.
There are other names on Metal Injection, so I think everyone who's currently writing is a person.
Well, the only person writing news for them is Isabel Ambrosio. That's the only person writing news for them.
There's different names from like 2 days ago. Lavia Thomas,
Are you looking
Cervante Pope.
at Metal Injection?
I'm looking at Metal Injection. Were you looking at Metal Sucks?
No, I'm looking at Metal Injection. I only see Isabel Ambrosio.
One day ago, Anthrax to make debut track by Cervante Pope.
I don't see that. Are you looking at
It's
news?
all, yeah.
I don't see that on
I'm
mine.
on news. That is weird. I'm not sure what would
That is
be
weird.
causing that.
So do you think they're hiring new people, or do you think they're doing AI, or what do you think they're doing?
I think that they are keeping certain people, like maybe the people who have been with the site the longest. And I think that they're going to probably get rid of all human interaction on
So
it.
you think you're going to do AI, you're saying?
I think something, yeah, maybe. Like, I think something's going on here, and I don't think that the sites are going to be run by the people for much longer. I think all of the writers who are currently on Metal Injection and Metal Sucks are real people. And I think they've been there for like quite some time. But moving forward, it's always one of those things where it's if you have drastic staff cuts, like what's going to happen next? Like, it's always scary thinking like that. So I don't think they're going to be really around for that much longer.
Should a news publication or any publication be required to disclose if an article was written by AI?
Yes.
I agree. Will that get through Congress?
Probably not.
Why?
Because, as I understand it, and I could be wrong, there's a lot of people in, or there's a lot of like AI lobbyists within who have the ear of a lot of like people in the government who are like, yep, if you invest in us or you throw money our way, like it's just good stuff for you. And, we don't need to be regulated. We don't need to be a regulated industry. We can, do this, that, and the other thing. So I don't have a lot of hope that there's going to be legislation that's going to pass, that's going to actually help people.
I agree 100%. And we said it before, and I'm saying it again. AI is scary shit, the way that's becoming so
Yeah.
pervasive so quickly. Like, if you call your doctor's office, at least where I'm at, an AI answers the phone. That's scary as shit,
Oh my God.
It's like effed up,
That's
So
terrible. Yeah, that's terrifying.
I don't, it's bad. I really don't know how this is all going to play out, Em, and I don't feel good about it. I do not feel good about it. But what can I do? What can I do, Em? What can I do?
Just try not to use AI, but it's like
Why? I
there's so
never use
many,
AI, I don't
but
think.
there's things that like even if you turn it off, then like you can't turn it off. Like Gmail now has AI integrated into it and you can't get rid of it, and it's so annoying. So it's like I don't want to be using this, but I'm using this by virtue of having a Gmail account. Do you know what I mean?
You're right. Like Gmail will say, "He let AI write this article for you," and I'm like, "No, bad AI, bad." Like
Yeah, and then
you.
you can't disable it without like
I'm
nothing working. It's like, what the
I'm
hell?
I'm amazed at how quickly most of my friends are accepting AI and like are letting it do stuff for them that they could do themselves, but also like let AI make decisions for them and let AI speak in a voice that's not quite their voice, but letting AI do it for them. That's very scary, Sam. I mean, Em, very scary.
Very scary. Very, very, very scary.
Sucks, man. Anyway,
Really, yeah.
well, here's something that's kind of cool. Mike D, the Beastie Boys, is back in action. He actually announced a whole bunch of UK dates today or Europe dates today. He's got, I guess it's solo. He's got a new track called Switch Up. And live, I think it's he and his Mike D and his sons live, but live they did two shows, two pop-up shows, and they did two Beastie Boys songs at the shows. The shows they did all new Mike D stuff and two songs, Looking at the Barrel of a Gun and So What You Want. And I didn't even know this. Back in 2018, 2019, Mike D was doing full solo shows, which I didn't even know. Listen to this set list back from 2019, M. So What You
Okay.
Want, No Sleep Till Brooklyn, 99 Problems, Jay-Z cover, The New Style, a Nas cover, Too Many Rappers, Brass Monkey, The New Style. Oh, again, I guess. A Kendrick Lamar cover, The New Style again. Sucker MCs by DMC, Run DMC, Sure Shot, Sabotage, I Want to Be Sedated by the Ramones, Get It Together, and Intergalactic. Like, that's like a crazy awesome set list. I would have loved to see that. I had no idea that happened back then. Frankly, I didn't think Mike D had performed since the end of the Beastie Boys. And so, M, do you approve of Mike D performing solo without the Beastie Boys? Do you approve of him doing Beastie Boys cuts without Ad Rock or at all? And what did you think of his new song called Mix Up?
I think that Mike D performing Beastie Boys songs kind of solo, I think it's fine. Because it's again sort of just one of the ways to keep them alive and keep people keep the music out there and circulating. So I think that's okay, unless like so that would be my initial thing. With the new song there, Switch Up. It's very like electronic, and I was expecting something different. I don't know why. Like I was expecting something, I guess, a little bit more kind of like Beastie Boys-ish, but I, again, like to a point this is, but like it's not bad. I don't mind it. I was just very surprised at what it sounded like. I like the visualizer. There's a lot going on to it with it, and I think it reflects the sounds of the song very well. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I thought the song was all right. It's really more electronic than it is hip hop, and I'm not a huge electronic guy. I don't know how I would feel about Mike D doing straight up. Actually, I would be fine with it. If Mike D is straight up hip hop, I'd be like, fine, that's cool. And I can guess, I can understand why he might not want to go back on past work. And the fact of the matter is if it's just Mike D without Ad Rock and MCA and he's rapping, it might seem a little pale, Then again,
Sure.
it might be kind of cool. I mean, I don't know if anybody, Mike D has already climbed the mountain with the Beastie Boys. He's already, Beastie Boys have some amazing records. So no matter what he does now, he's not really going to hurt his legacy unless he does something like MIA, which he's not going to do. And so, like, if he just put out some kind of cool hip hop records, I think people would be cool with it. I'd be cool with it. I think him doing Beastie Boys tracks live is pretty cool, especially in the context they did in 2019. Some Beastie Boys or Ramones tracks, just some, a grab bag. I think that's the way they do it. If he did just Beastie Boys, I think that might be a little tacky. And certainly if he called it
Oh,
Beastie Boys
sure.
or something like that, that'd be tacky. But Mike D doing
Yeah.
stuff from across his history, just like David Lee Roth does, or just like Rob Halford does when Rob does, Halford the band. I think that's totally cool. I'd like to see it. I think the dance stuff is okay, but I would definitely go see it just to see it. I did get to see the Beastie Boys twice, and they were awesome. The second show that they opened up, like the opening act was a dog show, which was hilarious. Like, not a dog show,
Oh.
when dogs do tricks on stage. What do you call that?
I call that I think
A
that's like,
pageant, a pageant. Anyway,
yeah.
it was, well, whatever that is.
I'm not sure.
When dogs come out, like jump through hoops and stuff, whatever that is, that was the opening act, which was pretty cool. So the other time I saw him, Tribe Called Quest was the opener, which was cool too. Okay, we got a couple other stories to hit up here, and we're doing pretty good on time. Oh, Rolling Stones got a new album come out. It's called Foreign Tongues. They've released two tracks, including In the Stars, and the other was Sick and Twisted. Rolling Stone just put out another album, I mean, about 2 years ago or so, which was pretty good. I liked it. I wish they used a different producer. The producer's Andrew Watt, who was a young guy and is a pop producer, and he produced like a pop record. What's the Rolling Stones, especially this age? You know what? The Rolling Stones have done it all. They've seen it all. They've smoked it all. So just let them be a rock band. Like their amazing album 2015, Blue and Lonesome, which is just them in the studio doing blues covers, which is what they did at the beginning of their career. Raw live sounding record, great selection of tunes, great performance, sounds one of the best sounding records ever. I think for the last record and this one, they should just do like just raw in the studio rock music, you know. And if they want to do something weird and freaky, that's cool. But I don't think putting a pop sheen over the songs really helps out anybody here, you know. And I don't know if they're with Andrew Watt because the record company wants that, though I have a tough time believing that at this point anybody's telling the Rolling Stones what to do, you know. So it might be the Rolling Stones, you know, Mick likes to stay contemporary, Keith likes to stay classic. So maybe Mick's like, yes, we want a pop producer to produce this record, you know. So yes, the new record's out. It's got out real soon, July 10. The cover, somebody called the cover unsettling. I actually think, and that it's real cool that a band of the Rolling Stones stature, where the temptation will be to put out kind of a generic or inoffensive cover, they put out this kind of disturbing looking cover, like with the band members' faces like all distorted. I thought that was pretty cool. I think the song In the Stars, I think it's okay. I don't think it's a mind blower. I think it's okay. That being said, I love the Rolling Stones. They're my favorite band. If they go on tour, I'll definitely see them. Of course, I pre-ordered this record. And it's always exciting to get a new Rolling Stones record, especially when it's sort of on the Rolling Stones label, Rolling Stones records, which is fun. So I'm excited. And when we get it, it'll be cool. Do I think it's going to be like one of the greatest records ever? No, but maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised. I will say the B side of their last record was amazing. It ended with a duet with Mick Jagger and Lady Gaga, which sounds kind of cheesy and sounds kind of like, what if we did pop and rock together, Lady Gaga and the Rolling Stones? It sounds very board meeting-ish, but it's an amazing song. It's an amazing song. One of the best songs in the past 30 years for sure. So this record is, I think it's like eight new songs and four songs kind of left over from the last record. I'm excited. I think the cover looks cool. I think the new songs are okay. And so we'll see. I don't know. And did you feel one way or another about this record and the Rolling Stones?
The album cover kind of got me. I had to like look at it a couple times. It was like, oh, that's cool. It's a mashup of all their faces. Yeah, other than that, like I agree with you about the song. Like, it's just okay. It's nothing to write home about, but like, you know, it's good to see them still doing what they want to be doing and, you know, kind of having fun with it. So what more can you ask for, right?
You know, it's funny. I mean, it's so easy to what they call it, Sunday, is it Monday morning quarterback. And I'm like, if they only had me in the studio, I would tell them how to make a great record, you know. And basically, like, I would make Some Girls again. Like, let's do like five punky numbers, you know, like two weird songs, maybe a country track, and bada big bada boom, there's our album, you know, and a ballad or something, you know. But yeah, what do I know, Em? Not much. So anyway, that's the Rolling Stones. A lot of punk discussion this weekend. We got MIA, Metal Sucks, Mike D. Who actually Mike D is punk. I mean, the Beastie Boys started as punk band. Rolling Stones, and now we're talking about Flava Flav.
Oh,
Flava Flav,
yes.
of course, of Public Enemy. He has announced She Weekend, Flava Flav's She Weekend. That's in Las Vegas from July 16th to July 19th. It's described as the following. 3 days, some of the most elite women athletes on the planet, sports, hospitality, and entertainment. That's She Weekend, but she is a bigger than a weekend. In 1998, Public Enemy told the world he got game. Now the world knows she got game too. She living that trophy life, so go rebrand a trophy wife. We're focused on real impact for women's sports, for women athletes, for what comes next. And so it's not exactly clear what this is, Em. I think maybe it's like lectures or something, you know. I think like it's a retreat with lectures. So the first question, Em,
Maybe.
what do you think this is, the Flava Flav She Weekend?
Yeah, I think it's going to be like there's going to be stuff like that. Like there's going to be, hey, you know, come and talk to the like the women's hockey team about how they prepare or how they like deal with pressure or, you know, like stuff like that. And then I think there's also going to be sort of like a party sort of like celebration of like, hey, like all of these like women athletes are doing some really, really, really cool stuff, and we should all, you know, really celebrate them for it and everything. So I think it's going to be a conference slash party.
Flava Flava, of course, famously sponsors the Women's Olympic water polo team. And without him, they actually wouldn't have been able to go to the Olympics or whatever because, like President Trump like slashed their budget or something like that. So yes. So anyway, M, the question is Flava Flav famously a sponsor of women in sports. Is this Flava Flav trying to support women and women athletes and perhaps fight against the male, what's the word I'm looking for? Not male domination, the male over influence in sports? Or is this Flava Flav being creepy and weird?
I think this is Flava Flav wanting to uplift women in sports. I think it's a pure intent.
I think so too. My only question is like, well, why isn't She Weekend being organized by a woman? But on the other hand, well, any a woman could organize She Weekend. This is just what Flava Flav wants to do, you know? So this is, I mean, but also there's like no details. Like you can't like buy a ticket to this anywhere right now.
They've just announced it.
Yeah, I mean, I grew like.
Okay. MGM Resorts. Let's see.
Oh, it is?
On the poster, it says in partnership with MGM Resorts, Delta, and The Gist. So I'm going to go on MGM Resorts and I'm going to search for She Weekend and see if anything comes up.
I mean,
Oh.
anymore, I like Flav more and more, and I like that he is. And you know, I will say that the women's volleyball team all speak very highly of the Flav, and they all speak very highly of him.
That's really good. Really, really good to hear.
Would
There's
you go to
nothing about She Weekend yet.
Would you go to this, Em?
I think it'd be interesting to see what it's about. So I would say yes. What about you?
Well, I'm not a she, so wouldn't that be weird?
Well, it's supposed to like everyone's supposed to like see women's sports and interact with women's sports and stuff 'cause like that's a big thing, like with the difference just between the PWHL and the NHL is like the PWHL has so many amazing players in it, but sometimes the games are shown at off-peak times when people like can't really watch them. Meanwhile, the NHL is reserved for prime time. Like, why is that? You know what I mean? So it's good to see more of a focus on like women in sports and different things. So, yeah, I think it's for everybody because everyone wins.
I note at the bottom of the thing, it says, P.S. Nobody owns She. No one owns Movement. Some things can't be trademarked. There is another She Weekend in Columbus, Ohio, which appears to be something different. Do you think that's in response to that?
Oh, I think so. Yeah.
Well, listen, I'm going to support Flavor Flav and say Flavor Flav's putting his money where his mouth is. And I'll say a lot of guys in hip hop, including perhaps the band that Flavor Flav's in, they do a lot of talking, and they do a lot of talking. But when you hold up their actions to their talking, it doesn't seem to jive up. By contrast, the Flav says, "I'm here to support women's sports." So maybe the Flav is, maybe the Flav is the male crusader for feminism in sports, you know? And that's okay with me. So there you go. And we've got 7 minutes left in one story. Maybe we'll hit another one
Okay.
after this. Oh, this is not that big of a, well, it's a kind of a big story. I don't know if Em's gonna have anything to say about this. The Ghetto Boys are re-releasing We Can't Be Stopped, and Scarface of the Ghetto Boys is re-releasing The Diary. Actually, I shouldn't say the Ghetto Boys are. I should say Rap-A-Lot is re-releasing Ghetto Boys, We Can't Be Stopped, and Scarface of the Diary. And then why do I say Rap-A-Lot and not the Ghetto Boys?
Because it's being re-released by the record label, not the band themselves or the
Right,
group themselves.
And I believe that Rap-A-Lot actually owns the Ghetto Boys, the name has and has owned it since the inception. And so this is, one of those situations where the band, the performers might get nothing just because the way this contract was drafted way back in 1987, 1988, which is something bands should always consider before signing that contract. What does it say? Who owns what? That being said, the re-release of We Can't Be Stopped is a big deal. Because until this record was announced then, what do you think a repress of We Can't Be Stopped was selling for? A repress.
Repress, I am going to say $1,000.
Not quite, 200, $300. And so it's cool
Okay.
to get this record back in print. The record famously features one of the most brutal pictures in all of hip hop and music. The photo fi features Bushwick Bill, one of the three members of the. Well, actually, it's got Willie D on the left, Scarface on the right, and Bushwick Bill in the center. He's in a hospital. And he's being wheeled down the hospital hall because he has literally been shot in his eye, and that's a real picture. Like that's not like a makeup
Oh.
picture. Like that's a real picture from when Bushwick Bill got shot in the eye, and he actually lost his eye. And he
Oh my
talked about
God.
how that picture was actually kind of upsetting to him, and it was kind of not cool that that Rap-A-Lot kind of took that photo in that fashion, which actually, when you think about it, is extremely insensitive and kind of not cool. I mean, it's a intense picture, but it's, he's literally been shot, that
Yeah.
being said, the We Can't Be Stopped actually isn't the Ghetto Boys' best album. It's got some cool stuff on it, it's got some not so cool stuff on it, but I do love the Ghetto Boys. I love the Ghetto Boys. I really like Scarface's first record, a unique group for sure, and of course, and Scarface's first record, not Money the Power. What's that first? Oh, Mr. Scarface is back. Extremely hated by Hallie Blitt, and I think might be one of the reasons she decided to stop being on the podcast.
I wouldn't go
She
that
hated
far.
that record.
Oh
She hated that record.
yeah, because we did it for Album Battle one
I
time.
feel bad about that. I was genuinely interested in her opinion, but I didn't think it would upset her that much, I guess because A, because I'm a guy, and B, I've heard that record so many times, it's like not upsetting to me. And
Sure.
I feel the record genuinely upset her,
Some of it was very misogynistic.
Yeah, well, it is. You're
Yeah.
true. But my point is, but there's also a lot of weird eccentricity in that record. Like the point, like the part in the album where he's having sex with the girl, but he's staring at a shotgun, which is has weird implications and some other. There's other weird implications in that record. Like on Good Girl Gone Bad, he keeps referring to another guy as a girl, which I'm not even sure that I'm not sure if he's revealing stuff he doesn't mean to reveal. I don't know.
There's a lot to it.
Anyway, I do enjoy that record a lot. Mr. Scarface is back, but I feel bad upset Hallie Bullitt. And I do think that might be what caused her to quit the Punk News podcast. Well, not that she quit, she retired from the Punk News podcast, I guess. Like,
I think she just
so,
got busy. I think
yeah,
there's just
I
a lot
know.
of like life stuff.
But I feel bad that, and I get it, but in that case, Punk News was the thing that got cut. And I feel bad about that. You know what I mean? Like,
I think so, yeah.
so, anyways, I do miss having Hallie on the podcast, but she's out there doing her, what do you call it? They don't call it conservation anymore. What do they call that?
Environmental protection?
Yeah, which is cool, and that's really cool
Yeah,
to
really
do that.
cool.
And very punk. And so anyway, yeah, we got 3 minutes left. Hey, do you care about this record at all, or do you like not care at all?
I am not familiar with this record at all.
It's pretty good. The
Yeah.
best Ghetto Boys record is actually one. It's actually a remix record, remixed by Rick Rubin. If the listeners haven't checked out, if they haven't checked out anything, they should listen to that. Oh, actually, it looks like the Ghetto Boys might be reuniting or something. The best Ghetto Boys record actually is probably Mr. Scarface is back, but after that, Checkouts is just called the Ghetto. It's just called The Ghetto Boys from 1990. That's their best one, which is the one produced by Rick Rubin. So yeah. And anything else we should talk about?
I
We got
can't think of
2 minutes.
anything right now. What about you?
Well, like I said, the Descadena show's coming up. That's gonna be cool.
Yeah.
The Clash show's coming up. That's gonna be cool. Record Freakout's gonna be cool. I'm off
Ooh.
to Vegas at the end of the month to see No Doubt. Oh. The No Doubt set list, M. It's probably gonna be the same look every
Oh.
show. Awesome.
Yes.
Awesome. All the hits, of course, but also surprisingly to me, M, a lot of deep cut rarities, like Total Hate 95. Let me pull up some of these. We got about 90 seconds, 60 seconds left. And then we're going to shut it down. And just so you know, exactly at 1 hour, I'm going to shut it down. Exactly 1 hour.
Okay, sounds good.
So let's see. They play Tragic Kingdom, Total Hate 95, The Climb, Trapped in a Box, ended on this. So some kind of deep cut rarities. So I'm very excited to see No Doubt at the Sphere.
I'm looking forward to hearing what your experience with the Sphere is.
Yeah, I think it's probably gonna be a little. I mean, everyone says like the most amazing thing ever. I think the Sphere will just be fine. I think it's IMAX. I think that's all it is, you know. Like I've talked to like five people that have been in the Sphere, and they're all like, "It's amazing. My life has changed." And I think I'm gonna go. I'm like, "It's IMAX." So, anyway, Em, that's 1 hour.
Oh, it is.